The University of Detroit Mercy presents another encore presentation of a classic Ask the Professor radio program. Today's show takes us back to November 2008.
The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show where you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors and their guests and friends. And today we have a friendly gathering here around the table. And let me introduce our professional and professorial staff to you. To my right, from the College of Liberal Arts and Education, Mr. Advisor himself, it's Ron Nansky.
Hey, Kathy, how are you?
I'm okay. And you have been doing a boatload of advising, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been kind of busy in there.
Yeah.
Now that we have a whole new program coming over from the College of Business.
That's right. Computer and Information Systems.
More students.
Oh, yeah.
You and I are a little busier.
A little busier and learning a whole heck of a lot more about computer curriculums than I ever thought I was ever going to learn.
And I'm a computer neophyte myself.
Well, you've got a lot more going on than I do that way, hon. Ooh, it's too much. Now, around the table, somebody who would probably really understand computers and how they work and because he knows like math and stuff, it's Professor Lazarus Kikas from the math department.
Hi, Kathy. How are you doing?
Well, see, I just find that people in your college just seem a lot more technically adept or...
Well, I'm probably the least technically adept.
Really?
Yes,
but like you can do calculus and math and like that programming stuff, you know?
Programming is okay when you're thinking about it, but when you're actually trying to debug programs, that's no fun anymore.
Oh, Lord.
It's just,
Lazarus, how do you feel about the show Numbers?
I'm glad that it exists. It's a little bit of exaggeration, but it's good.
Okay. All right. And on the other side of the table, also from the College of Engineering and Science, the person who runs the pre-college engineering programs for the kiddies that hit the campus, it's Dan the Dapset Man Mascio.
Hey,
and
Danny.
We're so glad that Dan finally has some time off, especially before the holidays. Your programs are over now.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay. But you're still doing, like, First Lego and doing that stuff, aren't you?
Yeah, we have the First Lego League state, one of the two state tournaments on Saturday, December 6th.
Oh, my goodness.
In Novi.
Oh, at that exhibition space? That huge,
place.
Yeah, that's a Mongo
it
place.
It is Mongo, huge.
And those kids they're so happy. Dan, one time I got to judge the spirit competition. I almost had like blood coming out of my ears. Those kids are really excited. What's the theme of this year's First Lego?
Climate connections.
Oh, okay.
So it's about global climate change.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. It's really cool. They have to build things with using the Lego, right?
Part of the program is the Lego robot that they build, and there's a playing field. They score points. It's just like a regular little like robot match, but then they have to do a research project tied to the theme, which is climate connections.
And it's so cool because each school has like different pins and buttons. And I mean, these kids really throw down. It's a great activity. Well, this is a show where you can send us questions about Legos or or noise or Novi or any number of things. And if you stump the panel, you win a Tech Day t-shirt. And if you don't stump the panel, you still get that fabulous Tech Day t-shirt. Who doesn't want a Tech Day t-shirt? Certainly not you. So send us some questions. So get those questions to us in one of several ways.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter at Ask the Professor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Or send them via snail mail, care of the College of Liberal Arts and Education, University of Detroit Mercy, 4001 West McNichols, Detroit, Michigan, 48221. And we're going to start off with a new set of questions that comes to us from Christine Whalen of South Lyon, Michigan. And she said, these are just a mix and mash of 20 questions. You can grade yourself, but I understand you want to do an A.
Uh-oh.
Okay, so, we'll go with the 80% in that way. Okay. For what magazine did Hugh Hefner serve as a circulation manager while he was raising money to launch his own magazine, Playboy?
Penthouse.
No.
I believe it was New York Magazine, wasn't it?
No, this is really very surprising.
Esquire.
No, it's a totally different age group.
Oh,
a completely different age group than what you're making.
AARP nudity calendar.
17.
Teen Beat.
No, it was Children's Activity Magazine. Highlights? Highlight, which was very popular. It's set in the 1950s, which is when Playboy was originally launched.
Wow. Oh, my God.
I thought maybe
you worked for the competition and said, I want to do this myself.
Well, Penthouse, wasn't that Larry Flint's magazine?
It is, yeah.
Because I remember that film about Larry Flint that they did.
That was after Playboy.
Yeah. Right, that's what I thought. Okay. That came afterward. Prior to his death in 1999, John F. Kennedy Jr. founded what politically themed magazine?
George.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
And it just didn't last after his death,
yep.
You know, which is really, really, really kind of sad. What was the cost of the first tour arranged by travel entrepreneur Thomas Cook of Great Britain in 1841? This is really incredible.
The tour of Great Britain?
The cost of the tour, yeah. It was a trip in England.
I don't know. $100.
Oh, way less. This is amazing.
A penny?
Well, a bit more than a penny.
A shilling?
$10?
A shilling. No, not as much as $10 either. This is a strange question.
It is a strange question.
Took him to the Tower of London.
Well, think about it. I mean, Thomas Cook got to be known as, like, pretty posh. In fact, actually, the term posh came from Port Out Starboard Home. It did from their trips.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was 14 cents, or the equivalent of 14 cents. The trip was a 48-mile round trip using British Railway between Leicester and Loughborough for a temperance meeting, an anti-drinking meeting.
I would hardly call that a tour of Great Britain.
I know. That's what I think it's especially for an anti-drink meeting, you know, I mean, for the temperance people, but... I mean, because later he got really famous for, like, his tours of Greece and Egypt and then of India. And, I mean, they still today, Thomas Cook is still a travel company in that way. What problem did Leonardo da Vinci, Winston Churchill, Albert Einstein, Thomas Edison, and General George Patton all have in common?
They all failed algebra.
That might have been, at least I know, in Churchill's case. Absolutely.
They were dyslexic.
So did Einstein.
They were dyslexic.
Oh.
Maybe that algebra thing.
I knew Einstein was.
So they thought that B plus C equal A? Was that it? Because they were looking at the equation the wrong way? Or
they read it backwards?
Actually, it's a myth that Albert Einstein failed algebra. He never failed algebra. He was very good in mathematics.
Was he really?
Yes. In high school, he was very, very good.
Oh.
They just thought of him as lazy, that's all.
But, was that it?
But he was very, very good.
Okay.
I don't think it ever happened.
Oh, good for him. I wonder about George Patton. I wonder how his algebraic skills were. If Barbie were life-size Barbie doll.
Oh, wow.
What would her measurements be?
36, 22, 36.
You're so close, I'm going to give you the 22 for the waist measurement.
49. I don't know.
No. It's still in the 30s, but in the high 30s. Like
38.
Actually, a little bit higher.
39.
39. She was 39, 21, 33. That's like unbelievable. No woman is shaped like that. That's impossible. Ah, oh, Barbie Millicent.
That's not a Weeblo.
That's not it.
That'll fall right over.
Okay. What did All Nippon Airways, that's a Japanese national airline, do in an effort to prevent its planes from sucking birds into its engines? So they did something on the outside of the plane.
Did they put like pictures of hawks or something?
They did paint something on the engine intakes, but not. It doesn't look like hawks.
They painted pictures of geisha girls.
No, this is kind of, I would never have noticed this about a plane. Or
painted a bird's nest.
It painted giant eyes, like eyeballs.
Oh, well, okay, make it look like a big bird.
Oh, there you go, like
so
it'd
scare away the other birds. That's where I was going with the hawk.
Okay, this English earl had both a coat style and a furniture piece named after him. Can you name that earl?
Macintosh?
I know he's got toffee going for him. I love Macintosh toffee. You can get it in Canada. Oh, it's gorgeous. Oh, yum, earl, yum, 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 yum. Let's see.
Earl of Sandwich.
Hey, he's...
He's a furniture?
Three chairs for him, yes.
Is it a chair?
Someplace you do sit.
No.
But it's another term for a sofa.
A divan.
Davenport?
a Davenport.
Isn't that what you call a sofa?
You can call it a Davenport. That's true.
That is very old.
But that is old-fashioned. It's a Chesterfield, okay? It was the fourth Earl of Chesterfield, the Chesterfield coat and sofa. That's a term I've really, again, only heard in Canada.
Also a cigarette.
That's right.
Also a cigarette. We're not doing well here.
No, we're not. Well, I gave you Barbie because, like, you know, that's just, like, too unbelievable. Okay. Before the introduction of the hairdryer in 1920, what common household appliance was promoted in commercials for its hair-drying ability?
A fan?
No, this is really bizarre. I mean,
household appliance?
Household appliance that you would not really think about using near your hair at all.
A toaster?
That's good. That's good. This is a cleaning product, which, again, I am so shocked.
A broom?
Not a broom, but something that does sweep up things.
Vacuum cleaner?
A vacuum cleaner. Yes, I'm sorry. Les got it.
Oh, very good.
She notes here, the vacuum cleaner could be converted into a hairdryer if you attached a hose to the exhaust mechanism of the vacuum canister.
Oh, of course. Reverse.
So if you did it in reverse, I guess it would blow like hot air. I hope you had a different hose than the one that like sucked up like the kitty litter
or
something.
That's pretty disgusting.
Like, ew. That is nasty. That is really nasty. How much hay was eaten by Jumbo, who was the famous P.T. Barnum circus elephant?
In his lifetime, in a day?
This is no daily. This is daily. She does say Jumbo weighed
250 pounds.
I'm going to give it to you. It's 240 pounds. Oh. That's amazing.
I was going to say 8 bales.
Yeah, this elephant was 6.5 tons. That's like a lot of hay. It's a ton.
It's a lot of
elephant. Wow. It really is. That's unbelievable.
I only got that because I watch Untamed and Uncut.
Is that it? I was going to ask, are you an Animal Planet guy? Yeah, my sister loves Animal Planet. She just loves any show. They have like an animal rescue or animal, like something, Animal Police Detroit. She's watching that program.
Yeah, they
loves
show
it.
That. Houston.
Yes, she said really good that way. Huh. What was the first living creature ever ejected from a supersonic aircraft?
A monkey?
Yeah, I would have thought so. And this animal landed safe after being ejected from it.
It's got to be a cat, then.
No, this is, like, so unbelievable. I can't believe they...
An elephant?
No, it wasn't Jumbo. Or Jumbo Jr.
A mouse.
Let's see.
A mouse would probably have better luck than a bigger animal landing and bouncing.
Let's see. Think three little...
Pigs.
Not pigs, but...
Three little blind mice?
Yeah, they didn't mind. They didn't mind getting ejected. They're like, that's okay. A bear.
A bear?
It says here a bear in 1962.
Oh, the three bears.
It was parachuted from 35,000 feet.
For what
purpose?
And
made a safe landing on Earth.
Oh, it had a parachute.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that poor bear. Like,
yeah, but
could you imagine? Like,
it had a parachute. That was kind of a punchline there. That was important.
I know, but think about like that bear, or think about if you were like just out, you know, taking a walk, and you look up and you see this bear with a parachute, and you run home and you tell your friends, "I saw this bear outside in a parachute," and they're dialing 911 and having you taken like to the drunk tank or like you know.
I want to talk to our clue lady. It wasn't the three little bears. Oh. It was Mama Bear, Papa Bear,
and
Baby
Bear. That's true. You're right. Bad clues.
The clue lady.
So while I think about clues, because I'm clueless, let's take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
I'm your host, Edwin DeWitt, and today we have almost all the regular panel with us. On my right, from the Department of Religious Studies, Professor George Pickering.
Hey, man. Pleasure to be here, as always.
Wow. That's the first variation in decades,
yeah.
I think.
Oh, no, I've been working up to it.
Okay, all right.
First the mustache, then pleasure to be here. What's next?
Yes. And on
as
his,
always, as always.
On his right, the woman he can't keep his hands off, the Department of English, Professor Claire Crabtree.
What can I say to follow that up?
I don't know.
Hello.
Say it was okay.
Yeah.
There are people out there waiting to hear.
Was it good for you?
And on Claire's right, from the Department of History, Professor Sarah Gravel. And on Sarah's right, from the Department of English, also Professor Hugh Kulig.
Well, I will just say hello and leave it at that.
I think that's the wisest
thing. Done enough damage. It was because of you that we were whispering.
Oh.
These were quotations, and you were to guess who said them. Who said, "Never lend your car to anyone to whom you have given birth"?
Irma Bombeck.
Yes, Irma Bombeck, exactly. Philip yep. Roth is a good writer, but I wouldn't want to shake hands with him. Who said that?
Somebody after Portnoy's yes, complaint.
Exactly. And who was it? It was a woman.
Figures it would be a woman.
A writer. A writer of schlock, basically. Now deceased.
In fact, oh, one Jacqueline
of her
novels.
Yes, I was going to say one of her novels just, was just reproduced by a computer or a new novel. Was,
oh, somebody's writing in the style of. Yes, you could just, call it style.
Exactly.
Well, she's not known to have shaken hands with anybody.
No.
Listening to an encore presentation of a classic Ask the Professor program from November 2008. Matt Mayo and the current panel of professors will return later this summer with more brand new episodes of Ask the Professor, so send your questions today to atp@udmercy.edu.
And we're back with questions from Christina Whalen of South Lyon, Michigan. And yeah, right now you guys are just at 50%.
Ugh.
So we're coming to the home stretch of these questions. So here goes.
Bring out the cheat sheets.
Bring out the cheat sheets. Bring out the laptops. Okay. No, we don't do that on this show. We promise. Okay. Like Tim Gunn says, we have integrity.
Yes.
To whom did Mahatma Gandhi write for advice on diet and exercise? Now, this is an American probably best known for like bodybuilding.
Jack LaLanne.
No, not Jack LaLanne. A little bit earlier than Jack LaLanne, before like pre-telly kind of bodybuilder. I think he often advertised like in comic books and that. Like,
oh, Charles Atlas.
That's it, Charles Atlas. Wasn't he the one that about
yep.
somebody kicks sand in your face?
Yeah, 150-pound weakling.
Weakling, that's it. Yes, so we got that one right. Yes, okay, starting off really well. Why does the Bronx Zoo in New York get blood on a daily basis from a local slaughterhouse?
To feed to the bats.
Yes. Dan, how did you know that?
I just know these things.
Should we start calling you Dan the Batman measure?
Well, it's either that or they're cooking up some kind of blood pudding or something.
Why do you think he asked you to turn off the lights?
That's
in the
right.
Studio?
Oh! Yeah, he notes here that these feed vampire bats, which are part of its captive breeding collection, which she notes has the largest collection of vampire bats in the world. Wow. In 1964, a capsized freighter was refloated in Kuwait by filling its hulls with these types of small balls.
Ping pong balls.
Yes. Where did the idea originate? This is so interesting. I mean,
where did it originate?
Originate. And once again, we talked about Charles Atlas and comics. So,
from a comic book.
From a comic book, but who's the comic book character? It certainly is.
Ping pong balls?
Yeah, that would have used ping pong balls.
Captain
America.
No, this is a company that I know some Americans have issues with because of its... sort of its grip on the child market with cartoons and...
Disney?
Yes, it's a Disney cartoon. Okay, it's a...
But that's another story.
Pretty
Heckle
close.
And Jekyll.
Not Heckle and Jekyll. This is a much more famous character. He's not Mickey Mouse.
Goofy?
He's next to kind of Mickey in
Donald
Disney.
Duck?
Donald Duck. Yeah, in 1949...
I don't know where you're going with this.
In the 1949 Donald Duck comic book, Donald and his nephews raised their uncle, the rich uncle, Scrooge's yacht by using ping pong balls
oh,
to
that's
elevate
right.
it.
I remember that.
So that's whoever was captaining this freighter in Kuwait decided to do the same technique and use those types of ping pong balls.
Must have used a lot of ping pong balls.
Well, yeah, I mean, for a capsized freighter.
Well, that worked.
That's what they're claiming, but I'm trying to think how that would have worked.
Yeah, I don't know. Lazarus, figure out how many balls.
Michael would Google that and check that.
But I mean, come on. How many ping pong? First of all, where in Kuwait did they find all those flaming ping pong balls?
I don't know.
My next question.
But that would take a lot of ping pong balls.
Yeah, and it totally would. That's really
you would
strange.
Think.
Okay. This famous Englishman's experiments with freezing meat in 1626 caused his own death due to exposure. Can you name that famous Englishman?
Benny Hill.
I only wish. That would have been, he could have done a funny skit on that. This man was a philosopher, a statesman, an essayist, and he has a last name of a product that just makes anything taste great when you put it in.
Bacon?
Yes.
It is?
Francis
it's
Bacon.
Bacon.
Totally kidding.
I totally believe that bacon is like one
but
of the greatest,
bacon
greatest
is
flavorings
anything
in the world.
With bacon is better.
Thank you.
Bacon is great.
Bacon is like the best. I bring great. Me some pig meat, okay?
I eat a lot of bacon. Really? A hamburger with bacon?
Oh. That's like heaven.
No.
Like bacon, like bacon bits or
bacon is breakfast food.
No,
it is,
no,
but on a burger, very delicious.
Oh, bacon like
for breakfast.
Yeah. Oh, for breakfast,
but
not, yes.
But you can put on burgers, and I think just think. Bacon is
do you ever put
wonderful.
It like with like cheesy potatoes, a little sprinkle in there, a little cheesy potatoes, a little bacon in there? You know, you got to pound on
oh,
your
I
heart really
that.
Hard,
no.
but
yeah.
it doesn't matter. It's just like yeah.
see that on my pizza. No, I can
oh,
see that.
There we go.
Yeah.
I was going to okay. say.
Yeah. Bacon on pizza.
The Greek philosopher Socrates was actually trained to do a trade. That is, you know, a manual trade. What trade was it?
He was a tailor. He
That's
made
right.
togas.
Those togas were really hard to
oh,
have.
Oh, okay. I knew there was
and those pleats.
The tradesmen.
Okay, well, think of
mining.
Think of Athens and what things were made out of.
Stone?
Yes. He was a stone
the
cutter.
The
yeah,
masonry?
Yeah, he was like a stone cutter. So that's oh. what he claims he was trained to do.
Another thing we can blame on the Masons.
Uh-oh. Not those evil Masonic plots, as Father Mueller used to warn us against, or
yes.
that evil Masonic oath.
Yeah.
I love those.
Oh, Father Mueller told us when we were sworn into Phi Alpha Theta, the History Honor Society, that the oath was not a Masonic oath. Therefore,
I would love
right
to
first.
Talk to him
oh,
about
he,
that.
Oh, he was so wonderful
I love
to talk
if you
to
talk
about
to him
anything.
Now, let me know.
I yeah, know. Right. I understand that he is. He is no longer with us.
Oh, but he was with us for such a good time. What a wonderful. We're talking
was
about
it. Was he ever on the show?
No, and I would have loved to have Father Mueller on here. Oh. I asked him one time, and he was so embarrassed. Oh, dear, you don't need me.
And he'd talk about historical.
Father Mueller just
no,
knew,
no, he was an encyclopedia, man.
So much cool stuff. He was just great. This actor was billed as the human mop when he joined his family's acrobatic and vaudevillian act at age 3. Now, he's probably...
Jack Palance.
He should have. That would have been great. But this is an actor who was famous somewhat in silent films. And he did go from vaudeville.
Buster
he made that
Keaton.
It is Buster Keaton, who was, I think, a great actor.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, there's some of those silents are so incredible. Like Harold Lloyd and his acrobatic work is, to me, unbelievable. And that the studio let him do that.
Buster Keaton did some phenomenal stunt work, really, in the old silent films, and he did it himself. And
yeah.
so that's what came to mind as soon as you said silent films.
Yes, he was one of the great of the silents. He really was. What did Hyman Lipman do in 1858 that made life easier for students, especially taking exams?
He invented the pencil, the eraser.
He didn't invent them, but he did something with those
two. He put those together.
He put those together.
Very
that's right.
Good.
He put the
there
pencil.
You go.
Because don't you remember if you had that like little square bit of, eraser that you had to keep like on the top of your desk and all? You bet.
Well, I'm so old, we wrote with quills when I took
Oh, Rod, get going, eh? Get over
quills.
Here.
Yeah,
you
quills.
Did not. You, however, remember what I do of fountain pens, those cartridge pens.
At my first desk, we had the... inkwell
well,
in the
them.
Top of the desk, sure. And we would dip the pen in there.
I don't
quill.
Believe you.
I'm
I
serious.
I do not believe you.
That must have been very messy.
What's that?
That must have been very messy. You know,
it was crazy.
What I always hated about cartridge pens, the little ink cartridge, that if you poked a hole in them, people would like squeeze them.
Oh,
and the ink would go shooting out, so you'd feel like something on the back of your neck and... It would, of course, stain your uniform blouse, and you'd get home, and your mother would, like, eat the face off of you for that. Who went to New York City to launch her modeling career in 1966 after she won the Miss Rocket Tower Beauty Contest in California?
1966.
Wow. I'm trying to think of something that she maybe starred in, or...
Was she blonde?
Yes, she was blonde. Her initials were C.T.
Huh. I can't even guess. Twiggy?
I'm trying to think.
Cheryl Tiggs.
Cheryl Tiggs, that's
it. Oh, Cheryl Tiggs.
No, was she became
Very
an actress,
good.
Though, didn't she?
She came from modeling.
Yeah, didn't she start doing, wasn't
oh, yeah.
she an actress?
She was one of the...
Charlie's Angels.
Charlie's Angels.
That's it. That's why that name is familiar.
Yeah.
Duh.
She was one of Charlie's Angels.
She was the last...
No?
No, that's Shelley Hack. No, that's Shelley Hack.
Is she... Cheryl
Ladd. No, Cheryl Ladd.
Oh, okay.
But I thought you were talking about
that was
the
voice
last
of God
one
from the tower
with the kind of funny hair. But that was Shelley
Fawcett, right? She was Farrah one, Fawcett, and then Kate Jackson,
Jacqueline Smith, and then there was Tanya Roberts, who was a horrible actor. I'm sorry, I have to like
you keep the vomit down. You remember far too much about that show.
I was going to say, Dad.
And I've never seen an episode of the show.
Okay. How much did 16-year-old Edgar Bergen pay a woodcarver for Charlie McCarthy's head in 1925?
For his head, kind of 25 cents.
No, it's actually a lot more pricey.
Oh.
$100. I mean,
that's a little too pricey, though.
$1.10.
Somewhat in between there.
$25.
65 cents.
No.
52 cents.
No.
43 cents.
No, it's several, it's dollars.
Oh, I'm going the wrong way.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
$10.
It's $36. Because, and she notes here that because he had a larger head, his head size was 5 7/8. So this woodcarver had to, you know, be very particular. Remember, Charlie McCarthy was his, you know, like, doll, would you call the ventriloquist? Isn't it a doll?
Kathy, by the way, I got to fess up.
Okay.
Okay. I was hiding it and I wasn't going to admit it. But on the Cheryl Teagues question, what she was remembered for was that white swimsuit that she wore in Sports Illustrated.
Oh, is that it? Okay.
And she claimed she didn't know that it was see-through.
Oh, get out.
When they took the picture.
Oh, she had to.
And so all the listeners out there that remember that are saying, that's what you know Cheryl Teagues from, and it is true.
It is. Well, why not? Absolutely.
But who could forget?
But no, I mean, my brothers, I remember, were very excited about that issue of SI, as they always were about the sports, you know, the swimsuit competition bit. What did Lizzie Borden and Napoleon have in common? We know Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her daddy 41. Yes.
They were dyslexic.
They were.
I used that. I'm sorry, I already used that.
They were under 5'5".
No. This has something to do with their appearance from the neck up.
They were.
Mustaches.
They were.
That's something they never told us about Lizzie Borden.
They had abnormally small heads.
Not really small heads, but it is something to do with their heads.
Ugly.
I would say with their
heads,
really
something to do with their heads.
With their heads, something on their heads.
They wore toupees.
Lizzie Borden?
I don't know.
Oh, she's a woman.
A wig.
No, they both had red hair.
Oh, Napoleon has red hair?
Yeah, I'm a little surprised. I thought that he had darkish hair, but who knows? Yeah. But I mean, it's not like you've ever seen.
I never remember seeing a picture of him with red hair.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, all these portraits, his hair looks very
dark
to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Lizzie Borden, I know, did have red hair. Because they would write about her.
Let's swallow the
Well,
blood.
Then why didn't they also include Lucille Ball?
Because that probably would have been a total tip-off.
I mean,
you know?
If you want a pattern, you need at least three things.
Yeah, that could have been it. Oh, so we've got to stop there. So we better get the last two, or you're a loser. Let me thank the panel, Professor Nasky. Bye.
Hey, thank you.
Professor Kikas.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being with us. Professor Meggio.
Thank you.
Ask the Professor is transcribed in the Communication Department's studios here at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced, technically directed, and kept well informed and in line by Michael Jason. And our executive director is Dr. Vivian Dix. So until next week, I'm your host, Kathy Bush. Let's go Titans!
We're back next week with another edition of Ask the Professor, so please plan to join us.